Hello, Logic friends. This is Amanda Elliott, the host of episode 50 with Mark Popham. Mark is a flame artist based out of Brooklyn, New York. Had a great time catching up with Mark as we talked about his career, starting from back in the day working in editorial. And then after that, he was offered a smoke position, but declined because he didn't know what smoke was at the time. Mark also talks about some of his own battles during the pandemic, as well as what junior artists might be struggling with as the industry has changed over the past few years. So join us on this fun journey with Mark as we also dive a little into AI and how it's affecting the industry as we speak. Hope you enjoy the episode. And now, a word from our sponsors. This episode of the Logic Podcast is brought to you by AJA, together with Flame since 2006. If you would like anything that Boris FX has to offer, including Synthes, you can save 15% with our new affiliate links by going to logic.tv/BorisFX. Logic Academy Pro. Learn, connect, advance with Autodesk Flame. Check out logicacademypro.com to see the amazing educational offers that we have. Yeah, I think I'm awake. It's funny because I like to be able to do, you know, podcasts around people's schedules and when they're available. So sometimes when I'm like, 9 a.m., this is fine. I'm like.
Then it's like, oh, no, I didn't mean this 9 a.m.
Like, did I? Yeah, about that. No, I'm serious. I'm awake. I think we're good.
That's so funny.
But like, yeah, I always think that's funny. I'm always like, yeah, the weekend's great too. Yeah, let's do that. And then I wake up Saturday and I'm like,
no.
Did I say that? Was that me?
Did I agree to this? That was noon, Amanda, not 9 a.m. Amanda agreeing to that. But thank you for working around my schedule.
Oh, no worries. I mean, you know, you're the guest. Like, please. Oh, man. So how are you doing today? What's going on? How's your life?
It's going pretty well. It's a drizzly day here in Maplewood, New Jersey, the post-production capital of northern New Jersey. It's a little, I literally found out. So I moved out to New Jersey from Brooklyn a year and a half ago. And after moving out, I found out that like every flame artist I know also lives in Maplewood, New Jersey. Multiple people from my office. My next door neighbor is a DP.
Really?
It's just like, a very weird confluence. That's like, oh yeah, everybody lives in this one town. I mean, obviously not everybody, but.
That's kind of a thing, right? Because I hear from a lot of people that work in New York. You don't really like live in New York. You live in Jersey or you live outside New York. How does that work?
Well, I mean, so I was in New York for 17, 20 years, and depending on how you count it, honestly, it was when the pandemic happened, I didn't have a home office.
We were counting in dog years, right? Is that what we're doing? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I wish, man. But when the pandemic happened, I didn't have a home office. I was like working on the computer in what was our dining room, and I've got two small kids. And it was like, oh no, we can't do this anymore. I gotta figure something out here.
You can't edit and play Legos at the same time. Man.
But essentially what you are looking at in your screen right now is why I moved to Maplewood, New Jersey, which is like I now have a door I can close. Is the big important thing there. But no, things are going well. It's a little dreary today, but I got to go into the city yesterday and go into the office and see everybody, which is great. And then today I got to not get on a train and go into the office. So that's great also.
Wow. So you know what? It's actually really kind of disgusting in LA right now too.
Really?
So this is what we're going to do. I'm going to go to the weather app and we're going to see who's got the crappier weather.
Drizzliest.
Let's see. So my location, I am on the west side in LA. It's 57 degrees. Disgusting, cloudy.
It's 54 degrees here.
Oh, got me beat.
And cloudy. And showers tomorrow, snow next Monday.
Do you see this? 57. What is it? Where am I?
You're in Maplewood, New Jersey.
I might as well be in Maplewood, New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's funny. You know, I've only been to LA a handful of times and like mostly in passing to something else, but a couple of years ago, I went out for a holiday party at the company I was at the time, and it was beautiful. And like we went hiking and like did all, and it's like, oh, I get it. one of the guys that I worked with had moved from the New York office to the LA office. He had like a neat little bungalow and he could bike to work and everything. And I was like, oh, okay. I had that, the New Yorkers like prejudice going in. And then I was like, oh, I get it. It's very nice to live here.
Like, what do you mean hiking? That just sounds like a regular Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you've been here a few times, so you kind of get the gist of it. You understand how LA goes. It's good. Did you go to some fancy coffee shops and spend $20 on a coffee? Did you get to do that?
I did. It was funny to go to a coffee shop and then walk out and then be like, oh, there's like, and this is also where I was at the time, which was like, weirdly enough, near the Chinese theater. But there was a coffee shop I went to, which was like a little ways away from Amoeba Records. And I was like, oh, I could just walk to Amoeba Records from here. And I was walking and I was like, oh, these aren't New York miles. This is a completely different type of mile you got out here.
You lost me at walking to. When you said that, I was like, huh? What do you mean walking to? You get in your car and you drive there. That's LA way. Everything's so spaced out here, though. That's the thing, though, too.
Yeah.
Is that it's, you're on the west side, you have stuff in the valley, you got downtown, you got like, you know, South Bay, you got all the, you need a car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes around here. But yeah, so good to know we've got the same kind of weather. It's great. Bundled up. I got my like little, this is, you might laugh at this, but I've got a little heater next to me.
No, that's very reasonable. I mean, I do fingerless gloves and everything when I'm sitting down. I just feel like I end up, if I'm digging into work, I end up like not getting up as much as I should. And I feel like I get cold from that. I should probably just set a timer and every 20 minutes get up and do some jumping jacks and like get the blood flowing. But
shovel some snow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it snow
too much of that recently? Yeah. It's been a couple. And I did a very nice thing, which is I volunteered to help elderly people in my neighborhood who get snowed in and who can't help dig them out. And so my house, it takes me maybe 5 minutes to dig out the front. It's not very, like, it's just the sidewalk. And then I go to their house and they have a huge driveway. It is so long. And I'm like, oh man, I didn't mean to be this nice. I meant to be a little nice. No, it's fine.
Do you have a snowblower or are you actually doing it by hand?
Actually, they do. And I got to use it, which was funny. It is like one of the plow ones. And I'd never used that before at all. And it was kind of comical.
Oh, man. Yeah, I grew up actually in Michigan and Canada. So really? I remember some of those. Okay. Yeah, I've been in LA for like 17 years or something. So
now you need the space heater.
So now I need the space heater. Yeah, I was like, oh, my Canadian blood, I'll be just fine out here. And then, you know, it gets 61. I'm like, oh, it's cold.
It's like, frigid.
Like, a little bit cold out here, guys. Like, what is this? Yeah. So the first couple of years I was in LA, I'm like, I got this. This is fine. And oh, no, it gets cold in LA sometimes too. But yeah. I don't remember, I do not miss shoveling snow.
Yeah.
Don't miss it. I don't miss getting half bundled up because you don't want to get too bundled up because you don't want to sweat.
Yeah, you're going
to
sweat.
Getting half bundled up to go dig your car out, turn the car on, dig it out, dig this, you know, the sidewalk. And sometimes likely we would lay sand down because we had a sloped driveway.
Yeah.
In Michigan. And like, I don't miss that. And then like you go back in and sometimes you're just like, okay, I'm a little sweaty. So I got to get ready, change my clothes, get ready, get back in the car and then leave.
Yeah.
Like, oh man. But, you know, kudos to you for doing that. Like, please. Thank you. Thanks for taking one for the team.
No problem.
It's cool on that side of the world. Looking at your LinkedIn, you've worked at some pretty cool places, man. Let's just be real here for a second.
I have.
You really have.
I've been lucky.
And it was cool. We were talking the other day and just kind of getting a little lowdown on you and a lot going on. You've worked on a lot of cool projects. Let's just start from the very beginning. Like as soon as I'm looking at your LinkedIn, you've worked at a place called Peep Show Post. And I know we talked about it a little bit, but please, for everybody else, like start off from the beginning. Like how did you even know about Flame? Like you mentioned you were in editorial, like take it all the way back, man.
So even before Peep Show Post, when I finished my undergraduate degree at McGill University in Montreal, and I had family in the city, and I kind of knew I wanted to come back and work in the city, and it was 2008, and I think you and I implied that we're both extremely old people at this point, but younger people might not remember that the world economy wasn't doing tremendously well in 2008.
Not at all.
It was not the most, the best time for me to graduate from college. But so I was interviewing at places. I had become interested in editing in college just from working on, like, there wasn't a film program necessarily, but it was just like working on weird little projects with people. And I actually had an interview for a position at BlackRock. There was a smoke position, and I had no idea what smoke was. And I went in, and they explained what smoke was to me, and I said no.
You said no.
I said no. They offered me the job, wow. And I walked out. And now I have these moments where I'm like, boy, like, I like, if I'm ever having trouble with a shot, it's like, boy, if I had like 7 more years experience, because I became a smoke op at that point, then
wow,
then this I'm sure this would be a cinch. But at that point, my interests were more in editorial, my interests were in film. And so I ended up with a vault management position at Peep Show Post, which was editorial, no finishing. Vault managing back in the day, vault managing meant something, because it was tapes. You had tapes and CDs of mixes and like burning DVD reels.
Wow.
And like working on DVD reels, which was very funny. And I actually learned some After Effects from that, because they were like, we'd like an animation on this. And it's like, okay, I guess I'm the guy to figure this out.
But did you already do animations? Because you went to college, right?
No, I went to college, but I was like a cultural studies major, so I didn't learn anything. I didn't know how to do anything. I was a baby. And so I actually, a cool thing about Peep Show, and also I worked with really great producers and really great editors. It was a place that was kind of in transition at the time, which meant it was a little, there were days that it was a little like everything seemed a little crazy, but also I kind of feel like that's how you make the biggest jumps in your career, is you're in a position where you can be like, I'm going to take care of that. I don't know if I necessarily can, but like I can promise that I will try. And you can take on more stuff. And so actually doing After Effects was the first like weird, like semi-comp stuff I was ever doing.
Do you remember what kind of stuff it was that you were doing After Effects?
Oh, it was like logo, like warping logos and things like that. I ended up doing some stuff for a documentary somebody was doing, where I made like the Monsanto logo wilt. And I was like, this is incredible. So it was an Avid shop. So I was, it was a place where they were really trying to move us up. So I did a lot of Avid assisting starting there. And that was also maybe my first experience with like software that was not incredibly user friendly. I'm looking at Flame right now. It's like, oh, this is the same grays as Avid. I mean, I don't know about Avid now, because I haven't touched it in a while.
I think you can still set the background to be gray, yeah, that, or like whatever classic color gray you want. Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of, I guess Avid was probably the first software that I sat down at and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. None of this makes any sense. There's a ton of hotkeys. Every editor has their own hotkeys. Actually,
right?
There's a bad habit that I have to this day of not using hotkeys. And that came about because when I was an Avid assistant, I would constantly, and actually at Peep Show, there was an editor who'd constantly be like, oh, you get up here and drive. You get up and drive. And I'd have to sit down. But he had all of his hotkeys, and I didn't know any of them. So I ended up not using hotkeys and just doing everything the like longest possible way. And that's, I've finally gotten to like to where I'm using hotkeys for most of my stuff. But at the same time, now I have the opposite problem, where somebody asks how to do something and it's like, okay, I'm going to have to look down at my hands now for like, I don't know how I do it.
So then that begs the question, are you Flame hotkeys or smoke hotkeys?
I believe I'm smoke hotkeys. That's another one of those things. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. In honor of the smoke that I never worked on. But
that's right.
It's so I think that one of the funniest things about Flame is you end up with lineages of how things are done, because there's so many different ways to do things. And because, and you learn from different people and you learn different ways and you bounce around different places. But you, the first job that I did Flame on, I worked with an artist who used Smoke Hotkeys. And so I was like, well, I'm definitely not touching anything else. Like, this is me forever now.
In case you have to drive, in case you have to jump on the machine, you just like.
Yeah. In case you got to drive.
When you're working next to somebody and they're like, oh, just press H or just press M or D. And I'm like, it's not doing the same thing. I'm like, oh, you're on Flame Hotkeys. That's right.
Yeah. It's something completely different. But so I was there for, I think I was there for a year and a half. And a thing came up in film post-production, or actually international film sales. It was at a film production place that mainly did international film sales, but they were producing their own films as well. In delivery, essentially, in once the movie's been made, once all the things have been made, once they have all the HD cam SR tapes made, then everybody who's paid for the movie gets sent everything. And a big reason why I took that is that at the time I wanted to move in a film direction. And also the hours for post-production there was some job where there were Australians in, and they just stayed at the office playing Guitar Hero until like 5 a.m. And I was just at the desk, like, and I was like, I need a 9-to-5 office job. Mm-hmm. And then I got to the international film sales place. And on the first day I was like, what are the hours for this job? I know it's weird. I never asked this before. And they were like, oh, it's like 9 to 7, 9 to 9. And I was like, that's what I just came from. So, but no, that was that was a fun experience. Well, okay. I say this now. It was a job.
That's a good way to put it.
It was a job, and it was a very like take over your whole life job. And it was with people where that was their like big, like the take over your life ethos was like very built into it. And a lot of it was working with clients in a way that I hadn't before, which like that's how I learned to write a business email. And not even just like the way of talking to people, the way of talking to people who are occasionally very mad at you about something because
totally out of your control, right?
Yeah. Because their HD cam SRs got lost on a ship somewhere or something like that. But
I mean, you did know that's your fault, right?
Yeah. But there were parts of that job that were extremely cool and mm-hmm. other parts that were rough. And part of it, again, was the hours, because they were even longer hours than post-production. And I was like, I wasn't getting paid the way that like I knew Avid Assists, who were mm-hmm. freelance. And I was like, oh, I've made a huge mistake. And so I ended up leaving that job for an Avid Assist position that then didn't happen. That an assistant editor position where I lost the job, and then they were immediately like, "Oh yeah, we can't." That job got canceled, and I was like, "Oh no!" I actually ended up continuing doing like honestly post work for the company I just left, because when I left, part of what I had been doing was internationalizing trailers in After Effects mm-hmm. and internationalizing film posters and stuff like that. And nobody internally wanted to do that. So for a little bit, I was just freelancing doing that and like making subtitling tapes and things like that.
Wait, is this still at the same international distributor place?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Same place, I've been lucky in a lot of job things, and partially like not immediately being like, oh, I've made a huge mistake. Anyway, I ended up doing more assisting at All Day Every Day, which was a really cool place. And I believe they're still around. It was marketing and editorial and production all in one in a really cool, like West Village townhouse. It was very neat.
And this is still in New York?
This is still in New York.
Okay.
It was like the coolest thing I could imagine possibly doing when I was 25.
Nice.
And was there for a while, got my skills up, and then went freelance as an Avid assist. I was freelance for an Avid assist for honestly not very long.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started to work at Arcade Edit.
Another good place.
Yeah, another good place. And they offered me a position and I immediately was like, okay, like I'm not going to find anything. Yeah, and I was at Arcade for 8 years, I think.
Wow. That's a good chunk of time to be at a really good company too. So yeah. That's good on you.
Yeah. And it was a fantastic place. And also that's where I moved into Flame, where I had been doing editorial for a while, and I had been there for like 2 months, and they were like, oh, we have a Flame artist now.
Did they say anything like, we have a smoke? And you're like, no. No, I'm just kidding.
Get me out of here. For some reason, I've decided not. But they had a Flame artist. I think it was probably a year before I realized that it's like, oh, this is the thing that I interviewed for and didn't take.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So, but so it was Tristan Wake, previously at the Mill, who came on board to do finishing there. And as an assist, you end up working really closely with the finishing person and passing things back and forth. And it always seemed really cool. And I was so used to doing these comps in Avid that I hated. I hated doing comps in Avid because they always looked bad at the end.
And the VFX artists always made fun of us, too.
Yeah.
<That's> cute.
Yeah. It's cute that you thought you could do this, but I will be taking over now. And so I was working closely with Tristan. Something about it was really appealing to me where I was like, there's the idea of when you're an Avid assist, you work on this. You're working on 1920 by 1080 footage. It's dailies. It looks like garbage all the time. Like you're doing comps and stuff on it and they look like garbage too. And then you send the XML or at this point, the EDLs and the work picture to the Flame artist. And then they send you back this thing that looks incredible.
You're like, what?
It's so beautiful because it's got the color in there and everything. It looks fantastic. And I was like, I feel like it would be really satisfying to be that person who's actually working with the, I mean, it's like becoming a chef and working with the, like, with the good ingredients versus being a chef and working at like Waffle House or something where you're working with what you're given.
Mm-hmm. Or like prepping. So it's like you move from like prepping ingredients to actually like, I don't know, being like the chef cooking and the very, putting the flour on with the tweezers at the end, right?
Yeah, 100%. And so I went to the executive producer and I was like, I'd like to explore this. And I think that somebody had mentioned that our finishing artist needed an assistant. And I was like, and this felt like a very big jump for me because I had never touched Flame before and I had to, it felt very much like they were taking a bet on me because I had to figure out a way very quickly to make it worth my salary. Like to free up this Flame artist to the degree that it was worth my salary, and I'm eternally thankful that the executive producer was like, yeah, sure. And then working with Tristan was fantastic, and he was a really great artist. And also then I think like a year or so in, I was like, oh, like it's, the comps are also very hard here. like my assumption that it was going to immediately be a ton easier once I was working with the like 2K footage was not borne out and this, like when you're working with a great artist, there's that like black magic moment where you're looking at a picture where there's something wrong with it. And the best artists I've seen, there's like one thing, it's three keystrokes and it looks correct. Mm-hmm. It's being able to see what the actual problem is that most people are not going to see. And maybe the client doesn't see. And maybe the client is telling you that something else is the problem, but having that eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's for me, that's been the most terrifying aspect of doing Flame is trying to learn that eye more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Having the meta knowledge to be like, this is the thing that looks wrong, and being able to enunciate that to other people even before you start correcting stuff. Because my worry is always you get into the weeds on something and then you look at it in the end, you're like, did I make this worse? Like, did I make this better or did I make it worse?
Oh man, I've been there before.
All I can see is what I've done. And usually the best thing for that is sleeping, is like going to bed. And if you've got that time, then you can come back and look at it tomorrow and be like, oh yeah, it's doing what I want it to do.
Or just take a 5-minute walk sometimes. I've noticed that. I've been in that position a few times before. And I really look up to people like Andy Milkus, you know, Glenn Teal. I've worked with both of those guys. And there's a couple times I asked them questions and they're like, oh, just this. And I was like, what? Like, man, didn't even think to go that route or didn't even think it that way. They're like, oh, and don't forget like the little shadow here and do the thing here and this and bring this little thing back here. And I'm like, what? Yeah. I mean, still to this day, like I'm very, very impressed by a lot of the senior artists that like the other senior artists that I work with. And I was working at another place called Mathematic. They're pretty new in LA. They're a new like French company in LA. And Vincent, oh my gosh, genius. Some of the stuff that he shows me too, I'm like, how do you even, where did, what? Okay. All right. I guess we're doing this. Like it's super crazy to think sometimes that you're like, you think you're going in one right direction. And then like someone else just, oh, try this. And three, and it like looks so much better.
And I think there is something that I've worked a couple of times with Jared Pollack, who freelances and does VFX management and things like that. And something, the best advice I ever got as a flame artist was, he's like, watch the footage, like watch the footage down, mm-hmm. watch it down. Like when you're conforming, watch it down before you conform. When you're like everything, just take the minute or so to watch things down multiple times before you even pick up your pen.
Good point. I've seen artists do that. Just loop the footage over and over. And I'm like, what are they doing now? Yeah, now I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's actually something that in my own practice has been a struggle, is where it's like, well, okay, I've got the color, I've got the conform prep, I've got work picture, I've got everything lined up. Let me just jump in and trying to make myself take that time and manage my time appropriately so I can take that time and watch stuff down. Mm-hmm. And that even goes to like bidding longer times for conforms.
Absolutely. That's super important. Sometimes I've had producers tell me, oh, it'll just take an hour. And I'm like, well, like, give me a little bit more time just to sit with it, to like pay attention to the footage, pay attention to what I'm like working with here. So I need a little bit more time than just jump on the box, conform. I want to sit with it. I want to live with it for a little bit to get to know it.
Yeah, 100%. And that's also because like, it sounds funny to be like, conforming is what I'm good at. But it's like, once, it's very easy to go mechanical on conforms for me, where I, like what I said about not getting up for an hour, where I can just sit down and plow through and difference mat and make sure that everything, like without even watching stuff down all the way through. And so that's constantly a challenge for me, is to try and get an idea of the bigger picture in like a literal sense, the longer picture.
Well, no, for sure. Because sometimes what happens is you don't really know what's going on in the editorial room. Like, so for example, you and I have been in editorial. We understand when a producer jumps in and they're just like, we need you to prep this for online now. And you're like, it's not ready. And they're like, no, just prep it and just give it to them. So we give them a rough cut that could not have a comp in there that we want, that could have an extra layer, could have a move or a push in that we don't even really want in there, but it's just we needed to prep it now. So we prep it, it's out the door, producer sends it. Now jump to us on this side now. We look at this reference and we're like, oh, they want to do a push in there? That's weird. And so we spend all this time going through and looking at it and replicating. And then next thing you know, the assistant will send an email, you know, the producer, oh, this is from editorial the next day. This is the newer rough cut because yesterday's didn't want all those push ins, all that. So it's like, sometimes you just need to, yeah, sometimes like I hear VFX artists go like, what were they thinking? And it's like, honestly, they might've been right in the middle of something and had to get a reference out immediately. And it's nothing of what they wanted. It's just conform it, but don't worry about like the push-ins and all this stuff. Just get it together, get it in the timeline, get the footage together. We're going to give you something way more polished later. So sometimes when I get prep and I'm like, I'm like, okay, I think I see what's going on now. They were in a hurry. They're in a rush. I have so many questions. So do you guys want the questions now? Am I going to get another rough cut later? Do you guys want to talk about this? Like, where do we go? So you and I kind of have a little bit more of a understanding of where this, like what could have been happening, what's happening here.
And I think as I've moved up in my career, it is it's been an interesting thing just having this realization. It's like, oh, so much of this job is not happening in the batch effect setup in terms of so much of it is communication with people, and so much of it is project management. More and more is something that I'm like running into. But actually, so I was at Peep Show for 8 years, five of those doing Flame Assist. And of those, I believe the last 2 years during the pandemic, so remote.
Ooh.
And that was an interesting flip, especially because...
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. Well, so this is actually something I've been thinking about too, is how I flame assisted and what I was really good at with flame assisting, where I was really good at being in a session with my flame artist, with clients there, hearing things that they needed, and while my flame artist was working on other stuff, fixing things in the background, passing him shots, passing him graphics beds, him slates. And I was really good at getting and mentally getting ahead of what they were going to need before they needed it. And I haven't been in a session with a flame assist in like the last session that I was a flame assist in was the last session I was ever in with a flame assist in the room. Just because that we have live sessions very rarely, mm-hmm. and the way that I used to work, like even more rarely. And so that's been really interesting as I've become a flame artist and as I have tried to have a mentorship relationship with junior flame artists, where it's like, oh, like a lot of the stuff that I could take for granted, if only being that if the client is going to look up from their salad and be like, that's bad, that's wrong, like what are you doing? Just having somebody there, like a lot of that I can't count on and they can't count on. And the way that I learned stuff, which was being passed a shot and being like, hey, there's people in the room behind you and they're waiting for this can to be erased from this shot and like get it done and pass it back over to me. He is a very kind man and not somebody who is like, I challenge you. But that experience, it's like, oh, that doesn't happen. That's not the experience of a junior flame artist now. So that's been coming up on both sides of that has been really interesting.
It actually would be really good to hear just a little blip real quick about what is it that junior artists are doing right now. I mean, because I know we're going to get into eventually the other companies that you work at and where you're working at now, but just give me real quick, what is it that junior artists are doing right now that you're noticing?
When the pandemic happened, for me, a lot of it became, there was kind of a level of cleanup that I was working up to. And then things over that would kind of automatically be shunted off to my artist. So I would obviously be doing conforms and resizes and all that stuff. And the opportunities to hear, and this was also because at Arcade, the early years of the pandemic, we did a ton of work. There was an initial slowdown, but then a lot of it was we were gifted with a lot of really flexible artists and a really flexible producing staff. And we were able to say like, okay, we can actually work in this environment and work very well. But because of that, there was a high volume of work and it did not make an enormous amount of sense for me to have those opportunities to be like, okay, try your hand at this shot that very clearly you're not going to be able to do, but you can take 3 hours and see if you can figure this out on your own. And now I feel like there is more of a tendency, obviously, junior artists to you're setting up the job and you're getting everything ready, setting up red pens and things like that, which was something that I actually never done before when I was at Arcade. I had never made a red pen. And now that's something that we bring in freelancers fairly often at PS260 when jobs are getting unwieldy. Mm-hmm. And as I like talking about project management, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, now I need to know how to do a good red pen, even if I'm not even sending out for roto, but just passing it to somebody so that they can make sense of what I'm doing, what I need. I never want to work with a freelancer where they leave and they're like, those people have no idea what they're doing. Oh, yeah. Like those
or
people.
Or the other way around too. Freelancers don't want to leave and be like, yeah, they didn't know what they were doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, and understanding that going in, like if you're a freelancer, it's like, okay, you're here on this job. You don't know everything that's been happening with this. Mm-hmm. And you maybe don't have the relationships with the editors and the online producers that I do at this point. So I need, if there's an editor who has a certain way they want things done, I've got to be the conduit for that information. But yeah, so I think it's a lot tougher for junior artists now to have that, to have environments where they get as much opportunity to play mm-hmm. as I did. And it's tough. It's hard to, I think as a flame artist, you kind of have to, when you're working with somebody in a mentorship position, it's another thing about setting out time and being like, okay, like I'm going to work on this shot. You work on this shot too. And then we can kind of go over it together.
I love that. I love sitting next to other artists and the play back and forth and different ways of doing things. And some artists have like the older school methods, right? Like my friend Glenn is just, he's a just paint it kind of guy. Just paint it. But the only part that can suck sometimes is like when his shot's done and like someone else needs to pick it up. And if they don't know how to paint, like how he paints, like how do you elaborate or fix or edit or modify or do, you know, do on top of what he did. And then I have other artists that I've worked with that have just been like node central. Nodes everywhere and all the, like the coolest, newest, you know, like nodes and all this cool new stuff. And I'm like, oh man, okay. So it's like, I've been brought up with old school artists and then I've also been training with like newer artists. So it's a very fun mix that I've noticed too. So I love sitting next to people and being able to sponge off of them and learn new things. I'm very much a people person. Yeah.
Yeah. And I from Peep Show, I was at Method for a year.
Oh, another good place.
Yeah, which was fantastic. And talk about like a roster of like really great artists and mm-hmm. really great freelancers too, coming in and out.
I've worked at the office in LA and yeah, great studio for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool. It was really fun. Did IHOP stuff there. I actually my first full flame artist credit is on a Vogue video. Oh my God. Who was dating Harry Styles? Olivia Wilde.
There we go.
Yeah, there's a Vogue video that she directed that I got to hop on. It was very fun and was kind of a last minute thing where they were like, hey, this has come in. It seems fun, but we have to do it tonight. And I was like, all right. And that actually ended up being very funny and very fun to work on. And also, like, I kind of ended up doing the entire thing, the entire conform, like with the director.
Wow, that's cool.
Where they had just come to them and just been like, hey, we've got this thing, but the timeline is crazy short on it. And they're like, who do you have available? So it was kind of fun for that to be my,
me,
my first,
I guess.
yeah, to be my first full flame artist credit.
I mean, you've heard the term thrown into the fire, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what happened. Yeah, that's exactly what 100%. Happened. You got thrown into the fire. Hey, sometimes you sink or swim, right?
Yeah,
you burn. Yeah. I guess thrown in the fire, you burn. So sometimes you burn or not.
yeah. No, it was great. But the thing that there was a little tension that I ran into just in terms of communicating with editors, because I had come up from an editorial background and I had worked really closely with the editors at Arcade. So an opportunity came at PS260 about a year in where they were building out their finishing department. And they were like, would you be interested in working in an editorial shop again? And I felt like that was something that really interested me because I liked the idea of communicating with editors, working with clients and but going into it, having that foreknowledge that an editor can provide where they're like, hey, they are very sensitive about the blues. Like, make sure that whatever happens, the blues do not get messed up or something like that. And that sort of communication, I think, is really fantastic to have. And it's been very nice at PS260. It's working at an editorial place is, I say this, but I've been lucky because both of the places I've worked with, all the editors have been like, I've never been at a finishing place where the editor was not like a kind person.
Nice.
And I think that also speaks to who these specific, both of the places that I've I've worked at have been very much like a family. From their perspective, they don't want to bring in people who are not like nice to work with. So the kind of rock star editor thing in my finishing career, I have avoided that, which has been nice.
I feel like we both were kind of brought up at the exact same time where, yeah, like the rock star editors, the rock star flame artists, the sushi lunches, like they get to decorate lunches. 10 grand to decorate their flame room, like stuff like that. Like I remember that back in the day and yeah. I was like, I want to be like them. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And now sometimes, depending on the job, depending on the company, sometimes we just kind of get stuck in a room in the back or sometimes we get a desk over there and I don't know. Part of me is just like, I remember, but you know, back in the day. And then a part of me is like, I'm just happy to be here sometimes. Like, let's just do this. I want to be able to work with clients, work with people and learn new things.
Yeah.
I'll sit at this desk. It's fine. I don't have to have that pompous attitude like back in the day. Oh man, it was very extravagant, but it was like kind of cool at the same time. I don't know.
It was cool. The parties were very fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was very funny. This is a controversial statement for me. But I miss in-person sessions a lot.
Yeah. I'm a people person too. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I love the fact that I can work from home for most of the time. I'm in the office one day a week right now. And I do not love Jersey Transit and being on Jersey Transit. I am not a fan of commuting. But there is something to be said for having that time. I will say my fear about Flame in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about AI. I want agency people to see the magic trick. I want somebody to be sitting in a room with a Flame artist and mm-hmm. they're like, this, what are we going to do about this? We got to fix this. This is a huge problem. And the person hits three keys and the problem disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And having that moment of wow, where they're like, oh, okay, this is what the money goes to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a magic trick that can be pulled off in front of me and that fixes the problem that I have. And I think having a work situation where it's five postings a day going back and forth off of email notes and you're very rarely even speaking to clients. And this is something that I've come backwards on because I don't want to spend my life on Jersey Transit and I don't want to be at the office until 2 a.m. waiting on somebody to pick the color of the font or waiting to get sign off from people.
Man.
Or like as a junior flame artist, just the number of nights I was just like waiting for Extreme Reach
mm-hmm.
at 2 a.m. But both for the future, for younger agency people, to have that understanding of what makes Flame special.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a very selfish, like day-to-day level, it's like, if we are getting on a call talking, or if we are sending emails back and forth talking about where this logo is going to be positioned, please, God, let's just get on a video chat. We can do this on Google Meet. I just need to like, so that I can move it up a pixel and be like, is this good?
Yeah.
So I think part of switch to mostly remote work is trying to be proactive about realizing when it's like, okay, we need to get on a call or we need to be in person for this
mm-hmm.
and trying as a flame artist to push for that.
Yeah. I remember sitting in the room all day with clients back in the day.
Yeah.
They'd order breakfast, they'd have lunch, maybe even dinner, and they would just hang out.
Oh, they loved it.
We would just work. They loved it. And sometimes, like, you know, it's cool hanging out with clients. If they're, you know, they're cool clients, you'd like talk and chat and you'd still get stuff done. That was fun. I really enjoyed that.
It was fun. And it's so funny because like back then they'd be like, do you think we have to go into the office tomorrow? Can we just come straight here? Let's just come straight here. We'll come straight here, right? Everyone's convincing themselves that they don't need to go to their office. But now it's like, they're like I feel like now the problem is they're like, I have to leave my house. Like, are you? which again, I understand, like it's very comfortable in my house. That's like, that's my most like old person attitude. And especially because now I work with agency people who are in their early 20s, because because obviously time moves forward in a linear fashion, but I
when did that happen?
It's like, it's so funny. You're like, well, I didn't expect myself to ever be 37 years old. That's weird. I was doing a spot a little while ago where we were doing SD versions, and they were like, why do we need these square versions? And I was like, oh no, you don't. Why would you remember? Growing up, you did not have a square television at all.
They were probably born past the year 2000. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what? The people that were born in 2000 turning 24.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Like, yeah, my big fear about the future of Flame is like the threat that just the loss of magic that it can have.
You make a really good point. I do remember times sitting with clients and they were like, I don't know how you're going to do that. And I'm just like, I don't know either. But artists next to me, we don't know either. Can you give us a minute? And then, you know, maybe the client will go outside or go take a phone call and, you know, in another room. And they're just like, how are we going to do that? Okay, how about we do that? How about you do this? How about do that? And you're just talking about how you're going to pick it apart and put it back together. And then when you start doing that and a couple hours go by and the client's like, yeah, let's just see where you're at. Like, where are you at? And then you show them the process. They're just like, they're blown away. Like, I wouldn't even think that you would have to rotor this person to fix the wall behind them, to do this, to do that, to warp that, to put that back. Oh, and then put the shadow back in there and the lighting. But like, they don't think about that. They're just like, remove the tree. And you're like, sure, I'll remove it. But it'll be a big black hole. Like, well, what do you want me to do after that? They're like, oh, well, if you remove it, what's behind it? It doesn't work that way. So like, sometimes you have to really kind of coach what you're going to do. When I worked in editorial, and that same story as you, same exact thing, we're related, I get it. But like, it was the same thing where like, I would go and sit with the online, because I would prep, you know, for audio, for online, for color. You'd prep all these sessions and you'd go to them, and sitting with the online artists, I just remember sitting there like, cool, like just staring like, that's so cool. Like, how did you do what? And that's how I got into Flame too. It's the same exact thing as you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny.
It's really good. And then also, let's touch a little bit back. We're talking about AI, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, beforehand. And I have two different strands. And one of them is like my own personal beliefs. So you had mentioned, do you want to talk about that article? Or
let's talk about it. It's kind of a little controversial on LinkedIn right now. Yeah, so I think it's very important to talk about it. Yeah.
There's an article Ivana sent me about, there was a listing for Framestore for an AI generative artist. And then they had to issue a statement. One of our job posting for an AI artist caused some concern among our community. It's like, yeah, I'll bet it did.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm like paying attention to, honestly, less in our space than from the technology people that I follow. And I tend to be a curmudgeon about this stuff. And with how I work, it's hard for me to say, oh, you know what, agency people, if there's one thing agency people are fine with, it's when things look sort of okay. Mm-hmm. They love it when things like look slightly off and it is difficult or impossible to change it. So I, on a first level, well, I don't know. Like, there's whole careers in post-production that were there 10 years ago that aren't anymore. Mm-hmm. Or there were people in Los Angeles who just cut mats all the time. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously those jobs still exist. They're mm-hmm. just not in Los Angeles anymore. And it feels very much like making any sort of statement about this where I'm like, I'm sure it's fine. It's like going to be echoing through my brain in 5 years when I'm playing the piano in a shopping mall or something. I think that at the level that we're working, I don't think that generative AI is going to replace a lot of people in terms of, I don't know, it's hard to say. My brain is fighting against this at the same time, because you see demos of stuff where it's like, oh, remove the logo from the shirt and the thing does it. Mm-hmm. For a while, I was like, well, maybe in like 10 years, my job is just going to be AI wrangler. It's just going to be figuring out how to use it. Although you could say the same thing about like Sparks and Matchbook and stuff like that. Like, you could say like that all of this stuff, that there's already a ton of effects and things, and you're never just taking a shot and dropping a Matchbook on it and just being like, done.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. You're never using those effects for what they say they, like what they're supposed to be half of the time. half of the time you're like, oh, well, I know a trick where I can take this and render it through this and negative
add
it.
And then that and works. That, and then
yeah, as something completely different. Knock on wood, this is something that will bring us a couple more tools, but you need somebody to drive. Like, you always need somebody to drive. At Method, I worked with Warren Palios, and he was talking about his early flame artist career, and he was saying, I always thought that the computer was going to do it. He was saying that a big thing that he struggled with was he always thought that that there was something he should be able to find that would make the computer do exactly what he needed to do. And then he was like, well, that's not why I'm getting paid. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that there's by necessity going to be a human element for a lot of this stuff. So, okay. Yeah. That's, I'm hoping that there's a necessity for a human element in the first place. And I think that just off the rack, these solutions are not going to satisfy for the level of work that we need to do.
Very good point. Yeah.
And that do not write that down and like put it in an envelope and get back to me in a couple of years
where I'm like,
boy, I was wrong about that. They don't need me at all anymore.
Actually, I had a conversation a couple of days ago with like a Houdini artist, and he was all for it. He was just like, let AI do it. And I was like, oh, I work on some beauty, some face beauty. He's like, let AI do it. And I was like, okay, here's the thing. Sure, I have an image or I have a shot or I have a sequence, whatever, campaign, and I let AI do it. But then now you're taking away the personal relationships. Like you were saying, you need someone to drive. Okay, but now I get these files back. I get these shots back. I get the campaign back. What if the client's now, you know what? We need to fix the pores. We need to give her a little bit of under eye bags back a little bit. It's too much. It's too perfect. And then he's like, yeah, you just tell AI to do all that again. I'm like, you're missing the layering process. I think that's what we need, is you're missing the process of the imperfections.
Yeah.
Celebrities, artists, they have these little scars, these little imperfections. Just tell AI to do it. And I said, you're kind of missing the point of like, we need the person to drive, but also it's between the artist and sometimes the director, whoever, to decide where it goes. So you decide in conversation in the room, like this campaign is geared towards a musician. How do we want them to look? Okay, but now this musician is also now an actress. How do we want them to look in a L'Oreal commercial versus this? Or like, because they do, they have different types of beauty, they have different types of way of doing things. It's all based on the campaign and the product. So you need to have this part, like he's like, just kept saying, just tell AI to do it. And I said, well, what about when we need to revisit these campaigns? So let's say next year. Yeah. So you see where I'm going with this, right? So it's like next year, now we have this campaign. We want to revisit this footage. All I have is baked in AI footage. Like, do I have plates? Do I have layers? Do I have a batch from AI? Like, how does it work to now deconstruct, take what AI has done to improve upon it and change it and do all these things? Like, are we just getting things? Because like in the Photoshop, when you open Photoshop 2024, it gives you a tutorial how to do AI. And when you try to go through the layers, it just keeps marrying the layers. And I'm like, well, I want to see the process of how AI did this.
Well, and we've already had a problem where I had to send an email to the editors just being like, hey, if you're taking a plate and you need to fill in the background and you're using generative AI, if you can run the raw through the same plate and we'll have that color corrected, because the algorithm changes hourly. So if you're coming back a year from now and you're entering the same prompts in, you're going to be getting something totally different. And that's the problem with repeatability, a negative for AI, where you can give it a prompt to do something, but next month, if you give it the same prompt, it's going to look a little different. And who knows? We'll see. Well, yeah, I guess we definitely, by dint of where we are, we will definitely see.
We will definitely, yes, exactly. Next 5 years, 2 years, whatever. But we need to be able to deconstruct what AI is doing. Because especially when it comes to face beauty, if there's like a little something over here on the cheek or the chin or something, I like everything else. But how do we just fix and manipulate this little part? How do we break down what AI did and get the batch and get the layers and get all that to be able to do it? So I haven't noticed that in Photoshop. I don't know how it works in other programs. I haven't played with it too much. I've just played with it in Photoshop, and I've just noticed it's just kind of like a married layer that I don't know how to break apart. I don't know how to get the like textures separated and all that stuff. Like we can do in frequency separation and stuff like that we do in Flame. Like, how do we do that?
And you get to the point where it's like, well, okay, if I'm if I'm just getting plates from this, if I'm just getting painted spots, I can just do that in paint. Like, it's saving me the paint time, I guess. Knock on wood. I guess the thing that I'm most worried about is that I'm not going to be the one making this decision, right? Like, we can have our feelings about AI and feel them very strongly and feel that the way that it works doesn't give the, like, manufactures a lot of problems for us at the back end in terms of repeatability, in terms of being able to be like, oh, we love this except for this one little thing. And it's like, I don't know how to get rid of that one little thing without digging back into this. But there is the concern that it's like not going to be up to us.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't take away a lot of what makes us artists. That word artist, I hold very near and dear. So I really hope, and we all do. And I just really hope that we can continue to keep being those creative artists that we are.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much. This has been amazing talking to you about all of this. This is so cool. I've learned so much more about you. And like, I feel like we're cut from the same cloth when it comes to like our backgrounds.
And it is funny. Like, and I don't necessarily know that that's an extremely common background for flame artists, where like I didn't come up through machine room or something like that. So it's a little different. So it's interesting to see somebody, yeah, cut from the same cloth.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. So I just remember back in the day putting a 3/4 inch tape into the 3/4 inch and then like recording to get a black and code on there to get it past 1 hour. And then you'd rewind a little bit and then you could go on Avid and then finally lay it off the tape by putting a little black on the tape. Like, I remember some of those things. And it's such an art form to be able to work with software from way back when, I think, too. Like, do you remember Flame and Smoke? Well, I don't know. You said no, but that's Smoke Jump. Do you remember when Flame, Smoke, Inferno, the IFFFS, remember when all those systems back in the day had the old UI? Like, do you remember seeing the old UI? Like, pre-2008?
No, I never saw that.
Oh, it's 2008. That's when you graduated, right?
Yeah, no.
So there used to be an older UI for Flame and for Smoke. And it was kind of like this screen, because right now it has very like Final Cut 7 kind of feel to it.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah,
exactly. I remember back in the day just starting to work with that. It was the old UI, and it was like, the library wasn't staring at you all the time on the left side. It was like the screen that you had to click on that was like another screen that opened, and it was like your safe space, right? So I remember that you would have to bring it in to like what was like your workspace, I believe, or like, yeah, so like your desktop workspace, but then like you clicked on another button that went to a library. So you wouldn't accidentally get rid of stuff in your library. It was like this extra screen. So when it changed over, I think it was 2008, to this new UI structure, it looked just like Final Cut 7. I was like, oh my God, I get it. Like, I already get it. And I was freelancing at the time and still going to other companies, like trying to like, quote unquote, teach them, your library is staring you in the face now. Don't delete what's in here. Because yeah, I was working at-
There is no other place.
There's no other place. It exists right here. So you can protect your library. You know what I mean? But it's like, it's always staring there. I remember a couple companies are like, oh, I'm just going to get rid of that. And I was like, what do you know it's deleted? They're like, no, it's saved in the library. And I was like, that is the library. And so there are a couple places, that I went there and just kind of just showed them really quick. Coming from editorial, I was just like, oh man, this new Smoke UI looks very familiar and I like it. It's been good learning a lot about you.
Yeah, this has been fantastic.
You've worked on a lot of cool stuff. You've come from a really great background. You're looking at a lot of cool companies. So man, just keep on kicking ass and taking names.
Thank you. Great. Thank you.
This is really cool. And hopefully we'll chat again in the future. We can talk about whether or not we have jobs.
Right? Yeah. Oh, boy.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
No problem.
Talking with
Thank you.
Learned a lot about you. This is awesome.
This is very fun.
Keep on doing your thing, man. It was cool. Thank you so much. All right. We'll talk again, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode of the Logic Podcast is brought to you by AJA, together with Flame since 2006. If you would like anything that Boris Effects has to offer, including Synthize, you can save 15% with our new affiliate links by going to logic.tv/BorisEffects. Logic Academy Pro. Learn, connect, advance with Autodesk Flame. Check out logicacademypro.com to see the amazing educational offers that we have.